You're listening to the Speechy Side Up podcast. Today, I'm joined by Lauren and Jessica from the Special Hope Network. In this episode, we discuss their nonprofit organization, what it's like providing therapy in Zambia, and how you can get involved.
You're listening to the Speechy Side Up podcast. This podcast will cover the flip side of traditional speech and language therapy, so you get inspired and learn from experts in the field. Here is your host, author, AAC specialist, and matcha tea lover, Vanita Litvak. She and her guests are serving up some informative and fun topics in Speechy Side Up.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Speechy Side Up podcast. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. This podcast is produced every week for your enjoyment. You can also follow along on Instagram at Speechy Side Up. All links are in the show notes. Now let's get into the show. Today is a first for the Speechy Side Up podcast. It's the first time I am interviewing two SLPs at once. Not to mention, they're joining me all the way from Zambia in Southern Africa. Hi, Lauren and Jessica.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm so excited to talk with you guys today. And you said it's about 8 p.m. there. It's 1 p.m. here. And I'm just so glad that we were able to make this work. So can you start by talking about the Special Hope Network and how you got involved and then what your current role is?
Sure. Special Hope Network is a small nonprofit focused on working with families who have kids with intellectual disabilities in a couple of different ways. We provide services that are in the community for the parents, and then we also provide services for kids that come. It's kind of like a school setting. I came to Zambia on a volunteer project through an organization called CLASP as a speech therapist, hoping to help the University of Zambia start a speech therapy program, master's program. And so some of us came over and we provided the clinical setting support for the master's students that were studying speech therapy through that new program at the University of Zambia. And that's how I met Special Hope Network, because they were one of the sites that we used to assess kids that needed speech therapy. And so I did a little bit of work with them when I was here, and then I went home back to just south of Chicago. And then about a year later, I asked if they had any open positions. And I was supposed to come back for about 18 months, and that was about 4 years ago, and now I'm the director of education. So I oversee all of our educational programs in the communities and with respect to the one that's more like a school.
That's amazing. And just so everybody knows, which one are you? Because I think it's hard to tell the difference between both of you.
No problem. I'm Lauren.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah, so I'm Jessica. I've been with Special Hope Network for a year and about 5 months now, but originally, so my kind of role within Special Hope is that I do a lot of individual speech therapy, one-on-ones with most kids. So within our program, like Lauren mentioned, we have programs that are out in the communities, and then we have a school set up, and then I kind of run more of like a private practice type model and doing speech therapy. And so specifically how I got involved with Special Hope is I took a class. So I'm from Iowa. I got my degrees, both undergrad and grad, from the University of Northern Iowa. And while I was there, I took a class about language literacy and poverty. And anyway, it really got me involved in looking for an organization that served students with those needs specifically. And so I call it a divine Google search. I literally Googled speech pathology missions and found Special Hope, and they were the only ones that had an active website that looked legit. And so I sent in my CV and my application, and then I came here in August of 2018. But so currently what I do here at Special Hope, kind of like I said earlier, is I do kind of a private practice model. And so I see most of my students in a one-on-one session where they'll come in and we do that outpatient model where I'll see them for half hour and send them home. And so it's pretty fun. That's it.
Awesome. That is so cool to hear both of your stories. And I love that phrase, divine Google search, because I feel like a lot of good come out from Google searches. That's great.
For sure.
Do you guys plan on staying there a lot longer? Do you miss home? I know it's like a personal question.
No, it's good.
Yeah, it's fine. I miss home all the time. I have a son here now, actually. He just turned one on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. So it can be a bummer sometimes to not have him be around my side of family, but we have our own set of family here too. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, this is home for now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, it feels like home. So I have no plans of leaving anytime soon. I really enjoy it here. It's kind of like my dream job. So I really enjoy it. But yeah, there's definitely times where you miss certain comforts about being at home. And so, yeah, it's nice. But yeah, we have our own little Zambian family here and it's pretty great. So I enjoy it here too.
That is so awesome. Well, I want to talk a little bit more about the Special Hope Network and the current projects that you guys are working on, how other people can get involved. So can you share about that?
Sure. So like we mentioned before, Special Hope Network kind of has a variety of ways that we serve families with children with intellectual disabilities. Our main project is called the Community Care Centers, where we serve families that are in the most densely populated impoverished areas in Zambia, in the capital city, which is Lusaka. That's where we're based. And so we serve them by having these centers that they can come to. They come 2 hours, 3 times a week, and the parents stay and they learn about how they can help their kids, whether it's health and nutrition, specifically different ideas for how to support their communication, physical therapy kind of exercises. We have different things that we do with them in different classrooms that they rotate through, but it's really focused more on the parents' learning. And so that is a really great program. And we've recently revamped it. It's actually a 2-year program now. So the parents are going through what we call like a certification, and they're basically having parent lessons every time that they come, and then being able to practice those same exact things with their kids after their lessons, which is great. And it's been really awesome to see. We have different classrooms set up, one of which has academic and communication and an interaction area. And then the other one has a self-care, a motor, a writing area, and these new great sensory fine motor walls that we've been building, which people can get involved by going to specialhopenetwork.org and clicking on that fundraiser and helping us build those. But those have been really great in our community care center programs. And then one of our other programs that we have is called the Resource Center. That is more like a school. The parents drop off their kids. They pay a tuition. It helps us be sustainable here and be able to support our free programs. And it provides basically an option for middle to higher income, because there's still not really any schools for those kids to go to that have proper support for them. And so that one, we have an autism program. We have what we call the essential skills program. And it's really for kids that have a lot of motor needs and a lot of communication needs. So we spend a lot of extra time focusing on those two things. We have a functional needs program where the kids are like making snack, making the bed, dressing, all of those self-care things, daily living activities. And then we have an academic program for the kids that are slightly more academically inclined and can work in groups. So that's what we have. And then we have the therapy center, like Jessica mentioned. Mm-hmm. And we do a lot of community engagement as well, a lot of trainings and other organizations, and working with the community as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. And I remember one thing Jesselyn, who is like your ambassador, was telling me when she reached out to me about the community care centers and getting those sensory walls funded, was that shipping is a huge deal from mm-hmm. the U.S. And it's like almost impossible because of how expensive it is, right?
Yeah, exactly. And another, it's extremely expensive because often it goes by weight and there's all kinds of different complications with it. You can either wait like 6 months to get something and then it's reasonably priced, or you can get it in a normal amount of time but pay a crazy amount mm-hmm. for it. So mm-hmm. neither are great options. And to be honest, in our community care centers, we're focused so much on the parents learning what they should be doing at home, especially for these 2-year programs where they're going to graduate and move on and do these things at home. We want to be able to build these walls with items that we can find here, because we don't want it to be these things that they've never seen before, and then they go home discouraged because they actually can't work on it at home because they don't have the same materials at home. So we try to buy everything here and set it up in a way that they feel like, oh, it's bowls and it's a book and it's this and it's that and these zippers and things that I can find
in my community that is really accessible
exactly.
for them to be able to practice at home. Yeah, for sure.
I love that. That's a really good point. So all you guys need right now, I'm sure you've gotten some donations, hopefully at this point, but you were like asking for $10 a person and all you need is like 50 donors to get to your goal. Was that right?
Yeah, exactly. So it's super tangible for people, very easy, just $10 and it won't take much. And that's for all of our community care centers to be able to have a wall like this. So, and the ones that are already up and running, the kids are loving it.
Oh, that's so awesome. And you guys do have more information. So I will make sure to include the link to that donation website or that link on the show notes for sure. So let's talk about the logistics of providing speech therapy where you are. I know you've talked about the model. Is there anything else, any other considerations that people should think about?
Sure. So I'll kind of talk, this is Jessica talking. I'll kind of talk through kind of the speech therapy that I've done within kind of the one-on-one environments that I've been working with for students. And yeah, so one main consideration that I think very much surprised me when I first moved here was the kind of multilingual aspects that we kind of think through when we're thinking through communication. And so being a little bit more specific within that is that here in Zambia, we have, 70 different dialectal languages. And so in Lusaka itself, there's two main ones that we work with, Nyanja and Bemba. And so, but English is the primary, like the national language that's spoken. And so most of my kids that are coming in for speech therapy have exposure to 2 to 3 different languages within the home. And then the other cool thing that I see here a lot is Lusaka is the capital. So we have quite a global city that I get to work with. And so we have different diplomats coming from different countries. And so I've probably served students that come from probably like 5 or 6 different countries that have walked through my doors. And so, yeah, learning how to do speech therapy across multiple different languages. It's not just Nyanja, Bemba. I've had kids that have come from Greece, Italian backgrounds, you know, things like that all over the world. And so, yeah, having to balance being a monolingual SLP with very multilingual students. So it's been interesting how that's played itself out and how I deliver my therapy. But yeah, it's fun. It's different every day. That's for sure.
Yeah, it sounds like it. That's amazing.
So I do speech therapy in kind of a different way. I do see one-on-one clients, but being the director of education, my role is primarily to teach our educational staff. And so I'm usually teaching one of our teachers how to do something. So we're providing to people in the community and they're like, I'm teaching the teacher and the teacher is teaching the parent. So it's kind of funneling down and through different levels of education, of course. And so we're trying to make these concepts as simple as possible and as tangible as possible so that the parents are able to really walk away with some different concrete strategies that they can do with their kids. And there's definitely some challenges in that. I think communication remains probably one of the more abstract areas in how to work on it with their children and kind of understand what the goals are that they're working on, because we're using pretty simple developmental milestone lists that they're kind of going off of for their goals that they're working through. And just, yeah, working through that with the different levels of education and the language barrier and some different cultural barriers about, you know, it's not really the mother's role here to play with their child. And so teaching the parents to play and kind of enjoy their children is usually our first step. Mm-hmm. So.
That's interesting. And yeah, it's interesting that you have to consider the cultural appropriateness of the therapy strategy that you're explaining to them. So are they receptive to engaging in play with their child, or is that something you've got a lot of pushback about?
Some more than others. Some are, you know, it kind of depends on how responsive the child is. If the child's responding right away, the parents get super excited and they're into it and they'll keep mm-hmm. going. If the child might be a little less responsive, or a parent is just maybe it's slightly more traditional, then we might have to kind of push them a little bit more and stuff like that. But that's why I work through the teachers, is because they can take what I'm saying needs to happen and put it into a culturally appropriate way, because mm-hmm. it's their culture as well, and work with the parents probably a lot easier than I would be if I was trying to work directly with them.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Okay. Very interesting. I know you guys also do feeding and swallowing therapy there. What is that like?
So we do that mostly in the community care centers. So that looks like the parents basically learning the correct positioning, the correct amount to give their kids, whether they should be using an open cup or a spoon. We very rarely actually recommend using thickener, because they have to get it from us. It's not readily available here. And any other options that are available here, you need to boil the water first to be able to use it, mm-hmm. Which can be challenging. And often we've seen that there's just not that much adherence to it. And so we basically do a lot of training with the parents. A lot of them come to us feeding their kids, laying down, and kind of just
putting big amounts
in their mouth. Yeah. For the reason being that they don't want to waste food. Obviously, mm-hmm. they're coming from a situation where food is very precious, and they don't want it falling on the floor. They don't want it dribbling down their chin mm-hmm. and things like that. So their solution to that is to lay the kid horizontally. And so, again, very simply, I usually bring in a picture of, you know, mm-hmm. the throat and lungs and all of that, to explain where it's going and why they've been chronically sick and going to the doctor and mm-hmm. things like that. And so gradually we get the parents to come around, and we have a lot of, so the adapted seating and the adapted equipment situation is obviously a little bit different here. We do have some, what would you call those? It's almost like paper mache.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a cardboard paper mache that they make adaptive chairs out of for kids with like cerebral palsy or other motor needs. Mm-hmm. And so they might have an adaptive chair like that, or we actually position them in the corner of a room mm-hmm. with pillows, because the corner is a great place for a feeding position actually. And so just getting creative and reminding the parents about positioning and amount. Those are my mm-hmm. two big things. Mm-hmm. If they can get that, then feeding and drinking looks a lot better for those mm-hmm. kids, and mm-hmm. they're a lot less scared to eat.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So,
yep.
But it's a lot of the kids, truthfully, would be NPO probably if we were in the States, or they would, yeah. But yeah. We don't have G-tubes here. They've tried it with one or two kids that we know of at the major hospital, and unfortunately both kids passed away due to infection, so mm-hmm. they just don't do those. We have one parent who used an NG tube chronically, for years, and that worked because she was able to put it in herself, but again, the placement, it's, you're never exactly sure where it's going, and so that's not a really great option either. So it can be really scary at times to see some of these kids eat who should probably have a G-tube. But the parents do the best they can with what they've got. And nutrition is a big thing, making sure they're feeding them the right things. And then we just do our best.
Wow. Yeah. That is so fascinating. Like all of those considerations, you know, given the environment, given the culture. So thank you for sharing that. Well, I'm sure there are people who are listening to this and they're like, I want to do that. I want to go to Zambia. So are you guys taking volunteers? How can people get involved, not only by donating, but maybe by volunteering as well?
Yeah, definitely. We're always taking volunteers. And we've got mission trips that are an option for people as well. If you want kind of a specific amount of time and a specific job that you're doing, if you want to come for a little bit of a longer time and you want to volunteer with us, that's an option too. If you want to come for like a longer of a time, that's an option too. So basically, if you just go to our website, www.specialhopenetwork.org, it's all there and you can get in touch with us and just let us know you want to be involved and we'll figure out a way to make it happen.
Yeah, and not just speech therapists either. And so if you, you know, working, if speech therapists are listening to this and they're in a rehab setting and you're like, oh, I think my occupational therapist or my physical therapist or some nurses, you know, anybody else who would be interested in partnering with us, we really do aim at working with the parent to really treat the whole child. And so we're also definitely in need of occupational therapists and physical therapists, you know, other disciplines that you might work within your school district, within your clinics, within your hospitals, you know, anything like that. If, you know, a group of you wants to get together and help donate some time, you know, anything like that. We're definitely looking for other disciplines as well. And so, yeah, feel free to share about us and yeah, learn more about how you guys can pitch in for sure.
Wonderful. So you might have mentioned this, but can people come like year round or like, is there a specific amount of time that they would need to stay?
You know, when people can come for a little bit longer of a time, it's always easier. So like more than a month is great. If people can come, like if they work in a school setting and they can come over their summer break, that's awesome. Because then they have a little bit more time to get to know what we're doing, understand the culture, settle in a little bit, and then really be helpful. But we have these mission trips that are definitely set up so that people can join in and come and meet the kids and do something great for a short time. So that's a great way to do a short thing. But if they are interested in coming for more than a month or 2 months or 3 months or a year round. I mean, we have positions that are open for that as well.
Okay, great. Thank you. Well, I'd like to wrap up with some getting to know you questions. Originally, I was going to use my generic questions, but as you were talking, I'm like, no, we need to get to know more about Zambia and life there. So I have a couple of questions for you guys regarding like Zambia. I hope you don't mind.
Sure. Go for it.
The first one is the best places you have visited there.
Ooh, that's a good one. My favorite place in Zambia. So Zambia is actually home to a World Heritage site called Victoria Falls. And so what is it? It's a mile wide, right? Is that how wide it is?
I have no
idea. I don't know. You might need to fact check me on this one. I don't actually know. But it's like the widest waterfall, I think, in the world. I might be wrong, but it's really big.
It's the seven wonder of the world.
Yeah, it's huge. And so it borders Zambia and Zimbabwe. And so it's like on the southern end of the country. And just recently here in October, I traveled down there. And in dry season, when the falls are low, you can go swim in the Devil's Pool, which is like a pool on the edge of the waterfall. And so you can like literally lean over the edge and you look down into the gorge where the waterfall is. And it is incredible. Oh, I've never seen anything like it in my life. It is my favorite thing I've done so far here. I loved it. It was so great.
That sounds so scary. Pictures of people doing that.
You Google Victoria Falls, there's like tons of pictures, or Devil's Pool, like it will pop up, and yeah, you can see lots of pictures of people like hanging over the edge, and it's amazing.
So my favorite place that I've been is a place that not many people have been to, I don't think, but so it's called Lua Plains. It's one of the national parks, but from Lusaka, it took us 2 days to get there. We had to stop overnight. One of the places, our trailer broke down carrying all the stuff that we needed because we were going like properly out in the bush with nothing. So we even brought our own toilet, like action, hooked it up and everything like that too. We were going to a river. So we basically we had an irrigation person with us. So we basically brought the piping to be able to hook up the toilet, to use it, and a shower and everything while we were out in the middle of the bush. But and we had to drive through sand and all these different places. But once we got there, it was the most beautiful. You just looked out and it was just grass and nothing else, like until the grass met the sky, and it was the best thing. And there was a thunderstorm like way in the distance at the night, and you could just see for miles, and there was nothing around, no power lines, nothing. It's great.
That sounds amazing. Were the stars incredible at night?
Yeah, fantastic. But you couldn't lay down and fall asleep because then a hyena would come and eat you.
Really? Oh, that sounds great. Wow, that's awesome. So I'm a big foodie. I'm curious, like, what types of foods do you eat there? What are your favorite foods?
We can talk through the traditional foods, hey?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the, like, staple food here is called enshima, and it's basically, like, cornmeal boiled with water until it kind of makes something that's like polenta or mashed potatoes, but stiffer. And basically you use it, you pick it up with your hand and these little, roll it into a little ball, press a thumbprint into it, and that's like your spoon, basically. Mm-hmm. And then you pick up whatever else you're eating. It's usually some kind of greens cooked down, or maybe some chicken or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so you eat with your hands that way, only one hand actually. But and so that's the staple food, and people will eat it. Some people will eat it for lunch and dinner every day. And it's a very similar staple food to the other countries in the region. It just has a different name in some of those countries. And so I don't know about you. I eat that about twice a month, probably. It's super filling. You go to sleep like right afterwards. Yep. Like I can't eat very much of it. It's too much for me.
Yeah. There's also like fun different kinds of foods that you can eat too. So I've recently tried these because now my stomach is like adjusted to like eating here a little bit. But they have capenta, which is a really popular thing here. It's like tiny little, I don't know what you call it, sardines.
They're fish.
They're little tiny fish, yeah, that you just eat whole. Usually you like cook it in some sort of sauce, but you like eat those little fish whole. And then more recently, my most adventurous food that I've had has been caterpillars. Mm-hmm. And so I've tried, caterpillars. They were very crunchy. They were very fried.
And termites.
Termites. People, that's another
termites
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are fun, but yeah.
Not all the time, but as like a special thing, especially to see all of us international folk just squirm a little bit, they love to make it.
Yeah, for sure.
We definitely have people that are listening to this and gagging right now. But that's awesome. I'm glad that you guys have like totally embraced being there and trying everything. That's great. Uh-huh. Well, if people volunteer, they don't have to eat that stuff, right?
They don't have to eat that stuff. We have pizza places. We have like burger joints. Uh-huh. We've got tons of restaurants and good food. It's fine.
Yeah.
Awesome. My last question before we wrap up is something you wish you knew about working abroad before you started.
I think the biggest thing, this is more of a serious thing, I guess, is like giving yourself grace, I think, is a big thing when you're working abroad. Especially as like, yeah, as being somebody that's like outside of your own culture and immersing yourself into a new culture, you have to learn a lot of stuff from like the beginning. And so like learning how, well, here we drive on the left side of the road, and up until I moved here, I'd only ever driven automatic cars. And so I had to learn how to drive manual like within the first month of moving here. And so, yeah, learning how to drive, learning how to pay your bills. But then when you think about, you know, as a therapist and like working, giving yourself grace and I think learning how to interact and embrace the culture, especially when you're thinking about communication, because yeah, that's such a big part of any culture. I've caught myself definitely in therapy sessions where I might use an American word and I'd say, oh, you know, that's a cookie. And here it's more British English. And so we would call that a biscuit, you know, or something like that. Or I'll be giving an articulation test and, you know, the word vacuum comes up, which is a very American word. That's not a word that they would use here often. And so, yeah, just giving yourself grace as a therapist. I think I took myself way too seriously the first month that I came here and started seeing kids. But yeah, just being able to let go and kind of go with the flow, and just embracing the wonderfulness that is a new culture, because I think that's the biggest lesson I think I've learned is each of us is designed in such a unique and wonderful way, and each culture has different ways of viewing things that are really beautiful, and you can gain a different perspective and a different lens to look in life. And so, yeah, that is one thing I would tell my younger self before I moved here, I think.
That's a great piece of advice.
For sure.
Kind of a little bit along the same vein, but I think if you're thinking about moving abroad or working abroad, something that would be really valuable to do before you go abroad is to learn how to take care of yourself and learn how to decompress and relax in a space that you feel comfortable with, so that when you're in a space that you don't feel comfortable with and it's slightly more stressful than you ever thought it would be, or slightly more overwhelming than you ever thought it would be, you have those tools so that you aren't learning how to do it when you're already kind of in the, crisis mode or whatever it is, kind of a thing. So I think, I was 4 years younger when I got here, and I didn't take the time before to learn how to take care of myself. And so I've been figuring it out while I've been here, and it's been a process and it's been a journey, but thankfully Zambians give you a lot of grace. You know, if you don't give it to yourself, they give you a lot of grace, and they're very patient and happy people. And it's a very welcoming community. It's probably the easiest place I've ever been to find a community of friends within such a short period of time. So
I'd agree.
Yeah, this is a good place to go if you want to try something out for the first time.
That's amazing. I love that. Thank you both so much for coming on. I know that the listeners are going to love hearing your perspective and hearing what it's like to work abroad, especially in Zambia. So if anybody wants to learn more, they just look for the Special Hope Network on Instagram, Facebook, and the website, correct?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, perfect. Well, thank you so much again. And I am definitely going to be in touch with you guys because it sounds like a really interesting opportunity. And until next time.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Before we go, I wanted to see if you like listening to these episodes every week. Do you want to keep hearing from these awesome guests? And do you love that you can learn the helpful resources and tips for free? My editor, aka my sister, and I spend a lot of time every week putting these episodes together so that they can be ready for you on Wednesday mornings. We would love it so much if you would take a screenshot of this episode and share it on social media or leave a positive review. And guess what? Every month I will choose one reviewer to win a little thank you gift. You can choose from a product in my TPT store, an AAC coaching call, or a gift card. It's the least I can do to show how much I appreciate your support. It's because of you that this podcast keeps going.